Welcome to the Flame Podcast, spreading truth like wildfire with your flamethrowers Anna Kane and Nicole Orozco on a mission to set the captives free. Now here they are, your hosts.
Welcome to our Torchbearer, where we are interviewing people who are carrying the torch of truth and making a positive difference in our world. This week, we have Scott Stevenson on with us, who is running for Congress. You can find more about him at Scott4WA8.com. Scott says, one country under God, the radical left Marxists and weak establishment right are destroying our country and endlessly fail to protect and support the average Washingtonian. We no longer have the luxury of waiting for someone to change. The stakes are too high. Our children's future is on the line. Our security and prosperity are at risk. Our country is on the brink. The time for change is now, and we cannot afford to lose. We will not lose. Scott, welcome on the show with us.
Thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So why don't you give us some background about you?
Absolutely, yeah. So I am running for Congress against Kim Schreier. I am the only America First candidate in the race. I am a proud Trump Republican. And as you said in your intro, thank you very much for that. Our country is under attack from the radical left and the weak establishment right. Frankly, the rhinos are doing nothing about it. And I'm an engineer by trade and background. I've been working 30 years in tech. I'm not a lawyer, not a politician, not a political insider. I don't know anything about politics. But what I do know is that our country is being destroyed in front of our very eyes. And I am standing up and exercising my right as a citizen to run, and I'm going to fight endlessly against this. The politicians, the career politicians in particular, are destroying our country, and they're the problem. And so that's what I'm for. Just a little bit more about me. I have a degree, a master's degree in aerospace engineering from MIT. I worked for NASA and Department of Defense for many years before going into the internet, and so I am a bona fide rocket scientist, so that's my joke, and I'm sure happy to be here for our conversation today.
I'm really happy to have you on. This is Nicole, and you know, when I read your bio or your declaration, and I feel the urgency, and that sits with my soul so heavily. I was just talking in between about the complete, utter urgency and the luxury we don't have to change things. But I do want people to know exactly what office, what your district looks like, what's the territory, and what can you do to change your local community too?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, urgency is such a great word for it. I truly believe that we have at most 2 years to save our republic. The attacks from the left are accelerating. The attacks on our kids, in terms of the grooming, the CRT indoctrination, these things are going on and on. And, you know, we have an invasion at the southern border. We have a stolen election. You know, all these things are accelerating in pace. And so urgency is exactly the right word. And that's why I'm pushing so hard to get new voices into political office. And in this case, what I'm trying to do is run for Congress. So a little bit about District 8. So I am running in Congressional District 8, which has been traditionally a conservative district since its inception many, many years ago, when Congressman Reichert, formerly Sheriff Reichert, stepped down. It was, unfortunately, the race was won by a leftist Democrat, Kim Schreier. And Kim Schreier is a pediatrician, as many of you probably know. And she supports forced vaccination of our kids and masking of our kids, which a pediatrician who has taken the oath to do no harm, in my mind, should know better. And in addition, she has also voted 100% of the time with Nancy Pelosi. So I maintain and submit that she is not the person we need in Congress to represent what is largely a conservative district. Now, let's talk a little bit about the district, since you asked. The district is huge. It spans approximately 10,000 square miles, everything east of Lake Stevens, east of Lake Sammamish, and East Pierce County, all the way to the Columbia River. So there are five primary counties: Snohomish, King, Pierce, Kittitas, Chelan are in it, and there's also a little piece of Douglas County. So we are talking an area that spans an incredible geography. I call it 10,000 square miles of awesome. It has a lot of everything that Washington has to offer in terms of scenery and nature and environment. And it also has amazing people. And I've been on the road now with my partner Jen for almost a month and a half in our RV. We call the RV the Gipper. And we have driven 3,500 miles, and we have been to every city, town, village, and hamlet in the entire district. And I have met personally thousands of voters and shook their hands and heard from them exactly how they're feeling and what they're worried about. And so that's our district, and I could not be more blessed and proud to run in this district. I've lived in it for a long time. I've climbed and hiked all over it, so I feel a very, very deep connection to District 8.
So you're just talking about traveling in the RV. I think that's so cool. All the memories that are made, right? And you talk about, you know, just being able to speak with people and finding out what's, you know, the issues that are concerning to them. So can you give us those top three issues?
Absolutely. So, you know, people assume that the economy is the number one issue. And I won't kid you, the economy is a critical issue. You know, obviously gas has gone from $2.17 a gallon 18 months ago nationwide to over $5.80. Energy prices are up, food prices are up. And so that is definitely hurting the middle class in a huge way, and we could talk about that a bit. But that's not the thing that people talk about. And they're not talking about crime in general. What they're talking about is three big things. One, they're talking about our kids. They're talking about the radical trans agenda. They're talking about CRT, the indoctrination that's going on in school. And they're really, really afraid for our country. But also, they do not want the government thinking that they own our kids. And they are pushing back against that extremely hard. And so that is the number one issue. And I sum that up as the no kids, no future. And this is a year of the parents. And number of years, we've seen movements nationwide in school boards for parents who are frankly fed up with what the federal government and local governments are doing with education.
And they're called terrorists, right?
And they're called domestic terrorists. We saw this with the Loudoun County Moms, that incredibly strong movement, which actually completely changed the outcome of the governor's race in Virginia. They were called domestic terrorists and labeled as such, and tracked by the FBI. So this is how our government responds to this. So
for actually parenting. So we have cities that don't parent their children, and crime is through the roof. But then if you want to parent your child, and you want to make sure that your child is getting a proper education and values, then you're a terrorist.
Yes,
you are
confusing. A terrorist. Isn't it unbelievable? Our own government is labeling citizens, parents, moms, dads, as terrorists.
My friend, he was on our show, Sean McBridery. He lives in Maine. He was just shout out from Dinesh D'Souza. And they took him to court because he said there was pornography, and he went against the school board, and he got, I don't know if he got arrested, but he was up for a charge. I know that. And he fought against it and won. And so that was a really, really powerful, good thing to happen. But we need that to happen everywhere. And how would you...
I think that's about being brave, right? So like, we got to stop being scared because we have some pushback, right? I feel like that's why the Democratic Party wins, is they don't care. They just go... you know, full board, and they don't care when they get pushback. We need to stop caring about the pushback and keep moving forward.
So you said two other, I'd love to come back to that, but I want us to get, make sure that you said that's the one issue, and thank you very much. What's the other two issues that, that you have learned as you were out talking?
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. So the second issue, and I'd love to dive a little deeper into each of these because I have a pretty clearly set out plan for what I'll do in Congress with these. We can talk about that later if you wish. But the second issue is the invasion of the southern border. 250,000 illegal aliens coming across the border every month right now. That could and easily will balloon to north of 500,000 should Title 42 and Remain in Mexico be repealed, which the Biden administration has already attempted to do. To put this into perspective, we only used 300,000 soldiers in Patton's army to invade Europe during World War II, total. So this is 250,000 a month coming into our country. These are largely single males. We know nothing about them. We are not tracking them in our country. We are simply letting them in. And in cases that we've seen, the federal government is actually providing transportation via buses and planes to different parts of the country. It is
they
clear
should provide
to me,
them back to their own country.
They should provide them back. And I stand firmly against ending this. I believe we should build the border wall. We should complete it. It's rusting in the desert. We paid for it. We have the contracts. We need to get the wall built. We need to stop this.
Is this an infiltration, a coup?
It's all globalism.
It's globalism, and also they're trying to supplant us in the
yes.
the voter rolls.
Yes.
They know that they can get these people in, and they can change the voter rolls to further the democratic, the liberal agenda, which, frankly, is communism.
Biff's world. They want Biff's world.
And how easy it is to fix. Not only do we have contracts for the wall's been paid for. It's actually costing us more not to be building it.
It's exactly right, Nicole. You couldn't be more right. This is such a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to law and order when it comes to immigration. We have laws. Our federal government is ignoring these laws. And I just want to go on the record to say, and I have done this, that there are two people responsible for the invasion of our southern border. The first is Joe Biden, and the second is Secretary Mayorkas of the DHS. And I will bring articles of impeachment against both of those men when I get to Congress. So
excellent.
That's awesome. Thank you for that. And by the way, this is Anna.
Sorry, Anna.
No, it's all right. It's all right. But that's exactly what we need to have happen.
Back it up. Secretary, what's her name? What's his name again? Secretary of what?
Secretary Mayorkas. He's Secretary of Department of Homeland Security.
Oh yes.
So he's also the brainchild of the Ministry of Truth, where he wanted to put the government in control of deciding what disinformation is, thereby controlling free speech. This is the same illustrious individual who is undermining us at every possible turn.
So what you're saying is we don't have the luxury of politics as normal. So immediately you would bring up impeachment articles.
Absolutely. And this just goes to what you were saying, what we were talking about moments ago, which is that we cannot act like it's business as usual. The radical left, the Democrats, they are taking. The Republican Party has been weak for years, especially the rhinos we have. We are always on our heels. We are backing off. We are trying to take the high road, and I'm afraid I'm here to say that we cannot do this anymore. I will never do this. I will fight. You cannot compromise with crazy or evil. That is the situation we are in. This is a war. It is a war, and we need to fight it as such.
I love that you said that. Like, this is a war. We can't play as like, it's so true. It's so true.
What's the third? The third point, and we're going to circle around and talk about more of this stuff, but what's the third thing you've been learning about when you talk to people?
The third point is that the election in 2020 was stolen.
Yeah.
And we all know that the Democrats stole the election, the Great Steal. Many of us have seen Dinesh D'Souza's 2,000 Mules. We've seen the sophistication and the funding that they used to steal the election, to steal our God-given right to vote. President Trump is definitely the president of the United States. And I firmly believe that. I know it. We have the data, the information. And I will go into Congress and I will work with my counterparts, including this large wave of red that's coming that will be America First people that I will ally with. And we will adjudicate the 2020 election. We will not move on. We will not move on from the 2020 election. We will not move on from what happened with COVID. We will not move on from what happened in Afghanistan. We will not move on from the Russia collusion hoax. All of these things need to come to light. We need to understand it. And I will work with my colleagues to ensure we get to the bottom of it.
And how are you going to do that? How is, I mean, like not letting it go and making sure we get to the bottom of it is one thing, but how do we secure our elections in the future?
So
definitely we will bring hearings, and these hearings will have teeth. These will not just be the ones we've seen, these show trial things that the Democrats and Republicans do. There will be real teeth and real consequences for lying to Congress and for lying to the American people. So on the topic of secure election, a couple things. There's a short-term thing I would love to communicate, and then there's a mid-term thing, a mid-to-longer-term thing. The short-term thing is, and I'm asking people regularly, every time I speak and everywhere on Twitter or all the social media I post on, that I encourage you, please do not send your ballot in the mail. Never put your ballot in the mail. Hold on to your ballot. Hold on to it until Election Day, which is next Tuesday, believe it or not. I can't believe how close it is. We're 6 days out. Hold on to your ballot. And there are two reasons you need to hold on to your ballot. The first reason is, if you send your ballot in early, then they know how many votes they need to manufacture and where they need to manufacture them to win. So you're giving them information. So you can simply hold on to it and prevent them from having that information, which means they'll have to do it without knowing, which means we can catch them. The second thing that you need to do is you need to go to votewa.gov, votewa.gov, votewa.gov. Look up what's going on with your ballot. You're holding your ballot in your hand. If you go to that site and it says your vote has been recorded or it has been accepted, it means that somebody illegally voted in your name. And now you have an instance of voter fraud. Take your ballot, take it to your sheriff, report this. The sheriff is required by law to investigate this. Now we have an instance of election fraud. If we all catch these people using this process, suddenly we can impact what happens in the midterm, in the primary and in the midterm. So that's what I suggest to everybody do here between now and August 2nd.
Probably the best info that we have gotten. Too bad we haven't had this for months. Thank you. Thank you for that info, because honestly, that is exactly what the people are capable of doing. Like, that is an action plan.
So votewa.gov, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Votewa.gov. Wow. You can go there, find out exactly what's happening. It's super actionable, super easy thing for people to do. It puts you in control of your vote.
So before you go to the ballot on Tuesday, go there?
Because you want to have your ballot in your hand to prove that it's your ballot and that you're the one that's trying to drop it.
And check, like, if your parents are, like, infirmed and they maybe haven't got their names off the voter registration, I'm going to do that for my dad. I'm going to see if he's still there, or my mom. These are people that my mom's passed 6 years ago. What if that shows up?
Right, and you can see, right? You can look up anybody's record, for better or worse. It's all public information. So go and look it up, and look it up for anyone you know. And if you have a deceased parent or friend, and these are the likely cheating vectors, is they try to hijack the folks who have passed away or who don't regularly vote. And so go and find those and look them up, and then we got them, right? And this is super actionable and easy to do.
What was the long term?
The long term thing is we need to get rid of mail-in voting.
Yes.
It is the single source of fraud. Unfortunately, it originated here under Kim Wyman, who many people call a Republican, who was not a Republican. She was a plant. As a matter of fact, she's been hired by the Biden administration. So mail-in voting is the source of the problem. And convenience is not what we need. We need election security. And here's what I propose. We return to paper ballots. We return to same-day voting. We return to small precincts that maintain the voter rolls. Currently, they're maintained by the state. They should return to the precincts. The precincts know the people. They can easily count them, so we do same-day voting, same-day counting. We'll be able to release the results on the day of the election. We also need nationwide voter ID. You need an ID to do everything else. You certainly need it to vote.
All those common sense answers.
Our Secretary of State has a lot to do with this, and what do you think about that?
Yeah, so our Secretary of State, I want to just put a plug in for a dear, Tambourine Borelli, who has become a dear friend of mine. She is an election integrity warrior. There is no one who can fix this problem besides her. She will never stop. She is constantly under attack. And when she's constantly under attack, that shows that she's over the drop zone.
Yeah.
She will fix, return us to paper ballots, same-day voting, same-day counting, precincts on the voter rolls. She will fix this problem. No one else can. I believe we need her as the Secretary of State, and so I endorse her fully, and I believe in her completely.
She writes for The Flame a lot.
We had her on early on. She's a warrior.
Yeah, she definitely, gives us a lot of info on voter integrity and issues. So.
I want to be clear that we've invited every Secretary of State to write. So it's not that we've just had Tambourine.
Right.
She just stepped up to the plate. That's all.
Yep. And just like different people we've invited to come on the show for the last month and a half, the people who've come on are the people who've said yes, and the others have declined. So we left an open door, but... We're so appreciative. So let's step back for a moment. When we talk about this full-on affront of our children, and I don't think anybody saw that coming unless they were already seeing what was happening, how can you as a senator or congressman, sorry about that, how can you work to replace and reduce and or overcome? Because this whole curriculum, this whole movement has started somewhere, and it's just pushed its way into every public sector school there is. How can you work with your people up there that support what you're doing to overturn some of this stuff, this perversion of the children?
No, absolutely. Thanks for asking that question. If I could just take about 30 seconds to describe the thing that woke me up, and I mean not woke, I mean awake. The thing that woke me up was what happened to my son, my 14-year-old son. I have three kids, two 13-year-olds and a 14-year-old, and my partner, Jen. My eldest son, Finn, who's now 14, but he was in third grade at the time, he was in Seattle Public Schools. One day, my partner, Jen, got a call from the school, and she was asked to come in. Something had happened in school. Finn, he has ADHD, and at the time he was struggling pretty mightily with fine motor control and focus and concentration, which is absolutely normal and common. And so she assumed, well, he must have had an outburst or something related to his frustration. So she went into school, and she was met by the teacher and the school psychologist, who sat her and Finn down in the room and proceeded to say that Finn had decided that he wanted to be a girl. They then went on to say, we have chosen a name for him, and we have planned a party for him tomorrow with his class to celebrate his new name. And Jen, if you do not do this immediately, you will ruin him for the rest of his life.
That's a lot of hymns when they're trying to convince you that your son wants to be a girl.
Yeah, well, they may have used her.
Go ahead, so keep...
But this is the thing, right? Like, this is institutionalized child abuse and grooming that is going on in our schools. So,
what did you do? What happened at that point?
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, Jen was completely on her heels, and I wasn't there because, we had never assumed anything like this was going to happen. So she immediately took Finn by the hand, left the building, as you would imagine, and we immediately withdrew him from that school.
Yes.
On the walk to the car, said, Finn, what is it you said that caused them to do this? And he said, Mom, all I said was sometimes I don't feel like the other boys. And what he meant was that he's an intellectual kid. He's not an athlete. And they twisted this through their radical trans agenda into meaning that he is going to be a girl. And within 12 hours, they started exercising and executing on this plan. So it's just so perverted and disgusting. And so he's out of that school. We put him in a private school. But let's be real here. We're tech workers, formerly. Now we're doing this full time. And so we were blessed with a bit of income that we could use and put him into private school. But not all parents can do this. They have to deal with this head on. And we're starting to see child protective services called on parents. This is so far out of the ordinary and crazy that it has to stop. So I'd be happy to talk about it. Here's the things I want to do. First off, and I've gone on the record with this, I put out a press release. I will use my position in Congress. Any public school or higher education institution that receives federal funding, if they do any of these things, CRT, grooming, radical trans agenda, they will lose federal funding forever. That is a huge stick that the federal government can use to wield against these guys, and I fully intend to do that. And that will be my signature issue should I be elected to Congress.
You know, they used the CARES Act, and they took all that money, and they said, okay, schools, push the masks, push the jabs, and we will give you money. Our local Edmond School District got $34 million under that program to entice them to stay with the masking and stay with the social distancing and to promote the vaccine.
It's just unbelievable. This is so along those lines, I mean, those numbers are horrific. And here, you know, we need to, and I will push for the demolition of the Department of Education. Yeah. We can no longer have this federal institution, department running our education system. I will work very hard to get rid of them. I believe in the money following the kids. We need to fund students, not systems. So I believe that you as the parent should get that money directly to you, and you should decide how you want to spend it on your child. If you want to send them to private school, by all means. If you want to homeschool them, that's great. And lastly, if you still want to send them to public school, by all means. But public schools now are going to have to compete for our dollars. They're not just going to get them, which is what's leading to this sort of stuff. So this is how we begin to dismantle the education system as it exists today and return to our kids getting reading, writing, arithmetic, getting civics, being taught that they live in the best country in the world, that if they're white, they're not racist. If they're black, they're not a victim. We need to return to these things, and that means we need to get the federal government out of education.
I have a question for you. Okay, so those are the top three. I agree. If we don't stop this stuff, all the rest is mute because we've lost our country. But at the same time, people are struggling. Rent is out of control. The housing market's crashing. Inflation's out of control. All the issues that kind of go along with getting your kids in school, on being able to think straight. If you don't have money and people are getting shot and crimes out and taxes and all of the issues that are coming alongside of this with those top issues, how do we change it all? There's so much.
Yeah, no, there is so much going on. Let's talk about the economy. And I briefly touched on that at the beginning. But so the first three issues that I talked about are firm instances of where the pillars of our republic are under attack from the radical left and the weak right. And this is all deliberate. They know they have to tear down everything that we have because no one ever chooses communism when things are good.
Who's they?
So they being the radical left and the globalists who want to destroy America because America is the only thing between them and global domination. We're it. And so if they destroy us, there's nobody left. They will end up ruling, and they will rule us like they want to. They want to create a totalitarian global state. And it's us that's standing between them and doing so. And so that's another big reason I'm running. Is to fight back against that. But let's talk about the economy. So the fourth pillar is the economy, right? We in America have a vibrant, or at least had a vibrant middle class we have the American dream. Those are under attack right now deliberately, again, by the left and by the establishment right and by the globalists. And so the way they're doing that now is they're weaponizing energy, because if you raise energy prices through gasoline prices and through natural gas, all of these things impact not just the price we pay at the pump or for heating our house, but it increases the price of food. It increases the price of fertilizer. It impacts us in every way, in such a way that right now, the average middle-class family in the United States is paying $5,000 more per year for the same things they were paying for last year. And that's a result of the inflation and the energy costs. So we need to return to plentiful, cheap energy. And here's how we do it. It's, again, a two-part plan. First off, we need to immediately lean in on fossil fuels. We need to get back to the leases. We need to be drilling again on the Alaskan Coastal Plain, the Cook Inlet Basin, the Gulf of Mexico. We need to signal to energy companies that America is open for energy in business. We were energy independent under President Trump. We had $2.17 gas. We were a net exporter of energy. We can be so again. We just need to return to that, which means these policies where the Biden administration is cutting off these leases and they're weaponizing the green agenda and essentially saying all you need is a Tesla and a windmill because that's where we're going. That is not a strategy. That is an effort by our government to destroy the middle class and to hurt us. And so we need to get back to plentiful, cheap energy. We can do that quickly. Energy companies can get back to producing oil, refining, and we can get gas down very quickly back to the levels it was at. That's the short term. The midterm, the longer term plan that I have is what I call an energy moonshot. Just like we did the moonshot under Kennedy, where we got man to the moon in a decade, we did that by engaging the greatest scientists and engineers, which is what we have in our country. And we need to put them to work on finding new sources of energy, a diversified energy plan. So yes, we're going to be doing things like solar and wind, but we're also going to be doubling down on hydro. We're going to be going after nuclear, which is something this country needs to get back to. Nuclear power is the best source of cheap and clean energy we have. We also then need to invest in things like fuel cell technology for automobiles. We need to invest in fusion power. The only byproduct of fusion and fuel cells is water, which is another resource that we can use. It's clean. We in this country can develop these. We have the brains to do so. Once we solve this problem, we give it to the world. Then all of a sudden, everybody has cheap and plentiful energy. Our national security is resolved. And all of these evil people out there who use oil and energy to get money to then go and foment unrest and hurt people worldwide suddenly will no longer have the money to do that.
I totally respect your answer in the energy field, because this is an area where more is better, not less is more, right? We need more options. We have the capabilities. But again, I believe that it is in the globalist agenda to keep us in place. And if we make other countries richer by, you know, exporting oil or getting oil from them and not our own country, then, you know, America is being tanked over and over again. If we, you know, push everybody to get electric vehicles and we don't have the electric grid, then we are keeping people essentially in 150-foot radius, really. And the notion, I think what drives me the craziest about energy is the notion that electric vehicles are
emissions. They're really green.
Right? That they're super green. Yeah, but the problem is actually it takes double the amount of emissions just to make them, because even just making the battery, it pollutes. And so, yes, maybe if the electric vehicle is put in a box, it has zero emissions. But getting it to be drivable isn't zero emissions. It's actually way more. So I love that you're wanting more option in the energy sector, because that is exactly what we need.
Yeah, I love that example you gave about the electric vehicles. You are so right. There are plenty of petroleum products are used in the production of these vehicles. Plastic is predominantly what's in them. The materials like lithium that come from these mines, the conditions for the workers that mine this, in many cases children, and forced labor in places like China. This is not the rosy picture that the radical left and left would like you to believe. It is entirely different. And there is no way to recycle these batteries. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you've seen online there are pictures of just graveyards, thousands upon thousands of electric vehicles, which cost too much to buy a new battery. It's cheaper.
A new battery is like $20,000. It's more than a car.
Exactly. And so this is all just a fabrication, a complete fabrication.
Yeah. So, Scott, we are getting close to the end of the show, and I really just want to wrap up one more question. And that question is, if you were in office during the pandemic, would you how would you have handled lockdowns and mandates?
Yeah, so thank you for asking this question. First off, I'm really glad you called a pandemic. We need to get to the bottom again, like I said, not moving on. We need to find out what happened with gain-of-function research and the role of Big Pharma and its associations with the government, and I will push that. But how I would have handled it? So first off, I believe the government has no right to mandate anything related to what we do with our body and what we put in our body. I went to the March Against the Mandates in D.C., and it was one of the things that really made me, that was actually when I was at that march, staying at the Trump Hotel, in fact, where I met an individual. I was become a good friend of mine, and that's when I finally decided to run. And I am fully against mandates of
Amen.
Any sort.
Well, so we like that answer.
I would have never voted for lockdowns. I would never have voted for lockdowns. I would never have voted to shut down our economy. You cannot shut down a multi-trillion-dollar economy and then expect it to just start up. This isn't like unplugging a computer and plugging it back in again. They brought our economy to a halt. They crushed small business deliberately. We know how many small businesses went out of business as a result of this. This was a planned and orchestrated destruction of the U.S. economy as well. You know, a couple years ago, saying these things, I would have felt like a conspiracy theorist. And now I feel like, no, this is the truth. And we know this is the truth. And there is more truth to be found. And I know that's what you do on this show. And we will continue to do it.
Thank you, Scott. Hey, so we are nearing our time with you. Can you please tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you and support you?
Absolutely. So you gave this URL at the beginning of the show. Please go to Scott, S-C-O-T-T, the number 4, W-A, the number 8.com. You'll find all the information there about how to support, how to donate. You'll find out where all my events are. Please go there. Please get in touch with us. What I really ask for people right now is you got 6 days. Please get out and vote. We need to vote in huge numbers in order to stop the steal. And I just ask, I know that we're feeling some apathy and some concerns over our vote counting. Use the procedure I shared with you. That'll guarantee that your vote counts. It's critical you vote. Don't sit on the sidelines. Even if you're not going to vote for me, which I really ask that you do, please just get out and vote.
Thank you, Scott, for coming on with us. God bless you.
Thank you.
We look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you so much. It has been such a privilege. You guys are awesome. I'll talk to you all soon.
All right. So we are nearing the end of our show today. And we do want to thank everyone for listening to the Flame Podcast. We want to thank Matt Larkin and Scott Stevenson for coming on with us. And if you like what we're doing, we can use your financial support to keep us going. So you can make your donations at theflameusa.com. So as we like to say, I'm Anna Kane.
I'm Nicole Orozco.
And I'm Steve, the producer. Johan reminding you to keep your tinder dry, your torch lit, as together with God's help, we're spreading the truth like wildfire.